From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the late spring when longtime local journalist Rachel Barnhart confirmed the worst-kept secret in town. She is running for state office. Barnhart challenging Assemblyman Harry Bronson for his seat in the upcoming Democratic primary on September 13th. It's a risk for the former TV news reporter and anchor. She's not backed by the Democratic establishment. They might prefer she run for a different seat or not at all, but Barnhart has said that's exactly the point. There's not enough diversity of thought and party politics in our state capital. So what would her priorities be if elected? You heard from Harry Bronson, who she's challenging. We're about to find out why she is running. Rachel Barnhart, running for the state assembly, is here. Thanks for being here, Rachel.
Thank you so much for doing this program.
I want to point out, in the same way that I opened the last hour, I did ask both candidates to come on together, Harry Bronson and Rachel Barnhart. You did say yes to that, so it wasn't your choice to be separate here. So for anybody, who's listening saying, well, how come she's not on with the assembly member? He was on in the first hour. We could not get you together.
I'll agree to all forums where we can talk about this race, and it's my goal to show a clear choice and a contrast here, and I think that we will over the next hour. I heard his answer. I think he doesn't want to debate me, but I remain open to it. So far, he hasn't agreed to any joint forums.
He indicated that debates are one way for voters to compare candidates, and that he suspects coming forward that may come together.
I hope it does.
You're saying you don't think it will.
I don't know if it will. So far, it hasn't. You're not the only one who's asked, but I remain open to the possibility. I will say yes to all opportunities.
All right. Well, the Democratic establishment, I think it's fair to say they didn't really want you to run, or maybe they would have wanted you to run in a different race. I've heard people say, hey, Senator Funky could have had a challenge, et cetera. What do you say to people who are looking at the establishment saying, well, is this the race for you to run?
I have the right to run this race. I've been a Democrat in Rochester since I was 18 years old. I can now say that because I'm no longer a news reporter, so I can talk more openly about my political beliefs. I have voted in every election, every primary election. In my mind, I've been here all along, and I've been a Democrat all along here in Rochester, New York. And I have a right to be here. And I think some of the people who are asking me, you know, why this race, why not that race, they're just angry I'm here. And what they're essentially saying is that Harry Bronson has a right to this seat. He's entitled to this seat, and he can have it for life. That is not acceptable. At what point can a Democrat stand up and say to another Democrat, you know, I think this person can do a better job? Let's let voters decide. At what point? Because what I'm hearing is never. And the other thing I would point out is many of the people who are angry I'm running, many of the Democrats who are angry I'm here, say, well, you know, Democrats, we don't take on other Democrats. That's ridiculous. This city has a huge history of Democrats taking on other Democrats, particularly in city primaries, because those are de facto elections. And I'm pretty convinced that many of the people telling me Democrats don't take on other Democrats will be more than happy to support another Democrat against the mayor next year when she runs. So there's a lot of hypocrisy here.
If she's challenged.
She will be. And, you know, there's a lot of hypocrisy here. And all I can say is I'm here, and all I can ask is that people listen to me and listen to why I'm running. And over the next hour, I think they'll get a clear picture of that.
All right. I understand that answer. But you could have chosen a wide range of races. You could have run in city politics. You love Rochester. Your blog is The Rochesterian. You chose state office, and you chose an assembly seat. Why this particular seat?
Well, over the last 17 years, I've extensively covered state politics. I've done numerous stories with our local state representatives. I've interviewed every governor since I've been a reporter. And I am keenly interested in state politics and how it affects us. I blog about that all the time, whether it's education or economic development. I have a lot to say about state politics. And I chose this race because, frankly, it's my first entry into public office. I had absolutely no interest in running against Rich Funky. That race, as a first-time candidate, that race would have been enormously expensive, and it would have been really nasty with a lot of outside dark money. I wanted no part of it.
Okay, so here you are in this election.
This will be not an expensive race, and it will be a clean campaign based on issues.
Now, given the fact that Democratic leadership might rather you not be in this race, if you win, there are questions about if you go to Albany, can you work within the party to accomplish something? So first on that, are you considering yourself, if you win this race, someone who would go to Albany and be essentially more of a watchdog, kind of continuing the tradition you've tried to set as a journalist, or are you going with a legislative agenda that you want to accomplish?
I would say both. Absolutely both. You know, for 17 years, I asked really tough questions of local leaders. I will do the same thing in Albany of politicians there. For 17 years, I watched out for your money. I'll do the same thing in Albany. For 17 years, I helped solve people's problems. I will do the same thing in Albany. I offer a fresh perspective as well as a fighting spirit. I won't be a yes person. I won't be beholden to special interests and high-dollar donors. I think people forget government is you and government is me. I answer to you. I don't answer to the governor. I don't answer to the speaker. And I don't answer to, your colleagues, as Harry Brunson called them, my family members. That is not the way it's supposed to be. It just isn't. And we need to have a more accessible and transparent government. And I pledge to be the most accessible and the most transparent lawmaker. I'm giving people my cell phones when I'm out, my cell phone number when I'm out campaigning. It's 585-210-3246. Call it. That's the kind of lawmaker I want to be. There shouldn't be so many divisions here. You should be able to call me and we should be able to talk about issues. Now, as for this whole idea, well, you know, you'll be a rookie lawmaker and everyone has to go along to get along, to be heard. And, you know, you won't get anything done. Albany is so, you know, Albany is what it is. Well, I think we heard in the last hour someone who is very deeply entrenched in the Albany culture. And I know that if I defeat an incumbent, that right there has people listening to you, because if there's one thing Albany lawmakers are afraid of, it's for their own jobs. And I think that's one thing. And I also have something a lot of other lawmakers don't, and that's an audience. I am very capable of telling the whole world on social media. I have a lot of followers. And they're very engaged and interested. And I have the capability of telling them what's going on. And that's a powerful thing. And I will continue to do that. If I am elected, you're all going to Albany with me.
Harry Brunson did say in the last hour, he thinks the media has done an unfair job of painting this picture of top-down domination in the state capitol, the three men in a room, et cetera. He says, you know, he points to Carl Hastie saying that, you know, I don't know a whole lot about farm activity, farm life, farm work when it comes to legislation that would impact what workers get paid, et cetera. And he kind of delegated some of that out. And Harry said that happens on a more frequent basis than you see, but it's behind the scenes. And we paint this unfair picture.
Well, that's not acceptable. Harry Brunson painted himself as this behind the scenes worker in Albany. Meanwhile, he's been virtually invisible in his district for the last 6 years. People don't know him. I knock on door after door after door. Hey, who are you running against after, by the way? If you don't know, that's a problem. People will know who I am. I will be present in every single part of this district, and I will be there to answer their questions and solve their problems. And I will stand up if I see something that I don't like.
Okay, but he's saying, Rachel, that we're not understanding how things really work there. In other words, he's saying he has been a lot more effective than you may even be explaining, because the machine is not just top down.
Well, we can ask your listeners if they think things are working okay in Albany. You know, they left this past session without having accomplished any meaningful ethics reform. They didn't close the LLC loophole. Harry Brunson's blaming the Republicans. Did he reach across the aisle? You know, why didn't they all stay? Did he stand up and say to his conference, "No, we have to stay here and finish this"? He did not. And you know, we need lawmakers who are willing to stand up to the machine and say, "No, let's stick around and get this done." It doesn't matter if nobody listens to them. It starts with one, then two, then three. That's how change happens. The definition of insanity is doing things the same way over and over and over again. Albany is broken, and we're not going to fix it with the people there now.
We're talking to Rachel Barnard, who is challenging Harry Brunson, who you heard from last hour on this program, challenging him for his state assembly seat. And this is certainly a risk. I mean, you know that as a journalist, you had to leave your career there. What happens if you don't win? Can you go back to journalism?
I don't think so. I turned 40 years old a couple weeks ago, and as I was looking at what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, I decided I didn't want to be on the sidelines anymore. I wanted to be involved. And yeah, it's a risk. I don't have a backup plan. I really don't. This is a short race. I gave myself a short window to get to win. And if I don't, we'll figure something else out. But I'm not thinking about that right now. I'm only focused on this race and winning this primary in September. And of course, it wouldn't be over then. You'd have to go on to the general election.
September 13th, that primary. All right, let's talk about ways that these candidates differ. You talked about ethics reform. Last hour, I asked Harry Brunson about, number one, supporting Sheldon Silver in those early days after his arrest. He likened it to wanting to give a family member the benefit of the doubt, that he said Sheldon Silver was someone who, you know, a lot of his colleagues were surprised to find out that he was under arrest.
That's ridiculous. You know, Sheldon Silver had been under investigation for a while, and Harry Bronson was under Sheldon Silver's thumb. And after Sheldon Silver was arrested, Harry never stood up and said that, you know, I'm deeply concerned about this arrest. Sure, you're innocent until proven guilty, but that there's nothing stopping any lawmaker from standing up and saying, this is, I am very concerned about this. This does not look good for us. And
I think a couple assembly members did.
They
not
did,
very many,
but not
just
Harry.
Just a couple.
He, not him. And we, you know, his answer to that question exposed so much of what is wrong here. And on the issue of ethics reform, you know, he talked about outside income. He supports the assembly's package on ethics reform, which would allow lawmakers to earn $79,000 in outside income. That's a lot of money. That's more than the median family income in Monroe County. And sure, we can toughen up disclosure and everything else, but the bottom line is they can still go out, be lawyers, and be hired by people who may have interest with the state. If not now, maybe at a later date.
All right, so a couple of points on outside income. What should the limit on outside income be?
You know, I don't really have a problem with the governor's proposal. I think his proposal is about 15%. I don't think it should be much more. And I'm not opposed to overhauling the whole system and taking a real look at whether it should be part-time or full-time and what the pay should be and you know, what would be appropriate here. Because we have seen lawmaker after lawmaker get arrested because they're trying to get more money. I also think the per diem system needs to be reformed. You know, just for showing up in Albany, they get something like $170 a day without having to submit any receipts. I think that's crazy. And most of them stay at the budget hotel and pocket the rest of the money. You know, things like that it are just emblematic of a culture in Albany that is broken.
All right, so there's not a specific number in your mind, but the bottom line is it should be far less in outside income now. $79,000 too much.
I think it is too much.
Okay.
I do. I think it is. I think you're leaving the door open for people to for some abuses there.
And Harry Bronson said that he thinks there's a difference between people who work in the legal field, and there are a lot of lawmakers who are lawyers, versus those who he met, he referenced as coffee shop, small business owners.
I don't disagree.
Okay.
But
so he's
a lawyer, and he does earn money in legal fees, according to his disclosure report.
All right. But he's essentially saying if you're making most of your money not in the law, it's different than lawyers who could be more easily corrupted, Sheldon Silver, et cetera.
Well, that may be true, but how do you go on a case-by-case basis? I mean, maybe you need to come up with a lot of different rules. I just thought his answer on that question was lacking, and he didn't disclose that, you know, he does support $79,000 in outside income.
All right, but he did say he doesn't think enough's been done and he wants to fight for more. You're saying the same. I mean, do you see much daylight between you on this question?
I do, because actions speak louder than words. Again, he was one of 150 state assembly members who left Albany without passing meaningful ethics reform in June, and he never stood up and said, we need to stay here and work this out. And that is a big problem. And nor did he stand up and say, hey, Sheldon Silver, I know you're the speaker, and I know you've controlled my life for the last 6 years, but we really need you to step aside right now because I'm very concerned about your arrest.
You also have mentioned in recent weeks, you've kind of come after him on ethical grounds regarding his mailers. We talked about that in the last hour. In fact, we had a phone call and some emails about it. Here's the situation as far as I can see it, and then you can explain your issues mm-hmm. with it. As Harry says, as a member of the assembly, he has legally, he's got the right to send mailers to provide information to people in his district about what he has been doing. Now, in recent weeks, there have been something like three or four of them since the spring. And I told him, I mean, I've seen the mailers. I said, I don't have a dog in the fight, but they look like campaign ads. He said they're meant to provide information, and he is not breaking any laws. He's not breaking any rules ethically, and that absolutely he wants to be able to reach voters or taxpayers or people in his district to make sure they understand what he has been prioritizing. What's wrong with that? What do you say is wrong with that?
Anyone, any reasonable person can look at these flyers, and you can go to my website, rachelforassembly.com. Any reasonable person can look at these flyers and see that they are nothing but campaign mailers. It doesn't matter if they don't say, vote for Harry Bronson. They clearly say, Harry Bronson's a great guy, and look at all these things that he's doing for you. There's no useful information for taxpayers. There's no details on these bills that he's claiming to fight for. There's just nothing there for anyone to use. And as your state assemblywoman, I pledge I will not use and abuse the mailing system and the franking privileges to send out garbage like that. If there's no useful information for you, such as, you know, hey, there's this new thing about the star tax exemption, or there's a health fair next weekend, I'm not going to waste your money. One point of clarification, I did call the Empire Center, which does the seethroughnewyork.net, when I heard him say the mailings are a lot less. They do stand by the dollar figures. However, it might not be the cost per mailer. He may have just sent out a lot of mailers. But he sent out four since May, I believe. And he did this knowing he has a credible primary challenge here. He's never sent out that much mail before, nor mail that quite looks like this. And that shows that that this is an unlevel playing field, and he's gleefully taking part in what we call the Albany Incumbent Protection Program. This is not right. And this is a guy with $113,000 in his campaign account, $89,000 of it from special interests, and he's still spending your money to send out mailers.
And we're talking to Rachel Barnhart, who is running against Harry Brunson in the Democratic primary for State Assembly. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You say that he has been sort of invisible in his own district, but you talk to Labor, they support him. They're not supporting you. Are you disappointed?
Well, sure, I'm disappointed because I consider myself a friend to Labor, and many of the unions came out for Harry before I entered the race, and they never spoke to me. I think only one union so far has sent me a questionnaire. I think a lot of people may not know this about me, but I want to share this. You know, I'm the daughter of two former RTA members. My brother is at UPS, works with the Teamsters. And I'm very pro-labor. And my personal story is I'm the only person in this race who ever put herself on the line for a labor fight. That was back in 2006. I was a member of AFTRA when I worked for WROC. And I had a non-compete clause in my contract. And WROC was using that non-compete clause in an extremely abusive way to hold down my pay because they knew that I wanted to stay in Rochester. And they wouldn't let me test myself in the market. I left WROC because I believed so strongly that this was wrong. And supported by my union, we filed a lawsuit against WROC, which was not successful because the judge said it needed to go to arbitration. This is a huge problem for Americans right now who can't get relief in the courts. They have to go through arbitration. And Susan John, whose seat I'm now running for, Assemblywoman Susan John, finally had the story she needed to get a law passed to forbid non-competes for low-paid broadcasters. And that law was passed. I wrote letters to every single legislator, and again, supported by my union, we got that law passed. And now it has benefited people like you, Evan. It has benefited people in this community who work hard to inform you every day. They're able to maximize their earning potential and stay in the community that they love, and not only in Rochester, but all across the state. And I'm very proud of that. That was a labor fight, and I lost thousands and thousands of dollars, and it was off the air for 10 months because of that labor fight. And I'm very proud of that work, and I want brothers and sisters in labor to know that I am with you. And I will be with you if I'm elected.
Now, I suspect you've talked to them maybe in private conversations. Have they expressed to you why they are not choosing you in this election?
One has. Well, first of all, you know, I'm at a big disadvantage. Harry Brunson has done a lot of work with unions, and he is done work with labor. I think he even teaches a class on labor. So I can't compete with him on his breadth of knowledge, certainly on labor issues and his work on labor issues. But I will speak, though, from the heart and tell you that, you know, I had this labor fight of my own. And also, there are many, many members of the Rochester Teachers Association who support me because for 17 years, I was sometimes the only reporter in town who questioned our superintendents who had policies that were very detrimental to teachers. And they remember that work and they support me. And NYSET did tell me that they came out, a representative from NYSET, I shouldn't say the whole union told me, but one representative from NYSET said Harry Brunson has a 100% voting record with NYSET, which I find hard to believe because even though he says that he doesn't support tying teacher evaluations to tests, he totally went along with the governor when that happened. He never said a word about the opt-out parents. He has gone along with the test and punish cycle. And, you know, and what I hear is, oh, well, they have to vote for these things because they're in the budget. But you never heard Harry Bronson stand up and say this is wrong. You never heard him stand up and support the opt-out parents. This whole, the governor's education reform agenda has been a complete disaster and a complete mess. That's why they're rolling it back right now. And you never heard Harry Bronson stand up and say this is wrong. Well, and so it amazes me that NYSA gave him a 100% voting record, be that as it may. I think red flags should be raised anytime anyone has a 100% voting record on anything, and anyone gets a certain amount of money, a certain huge percentage of money from any interest, because it raises questions about independence. Look, there are a lot of great special interest groups, and a lot of people think unions are great special interest groups. I do too. But even great special interest groups that we love can sometimes ask you to do things that aren't quite right. And I think independence is important, and I think it's worth raising the issue. And I don't, and I, you know, but back to your original point, yes, I'm disappointed that that you know a lot of labor isn't supporting me. But I know that individual members of labor are listening to me and talking to me, particularly members of the RTA.
All right, I see the phone ringing. Let me grab our first call. This is Keith in Rochester. Go ahead, Keith.
Evan, how you doing?
Good.
Interesting show. Rachel, personally, I would have rather seen you run against Rich Funke, because at least you could have showed a difference. I just don't think there's a huge difference between you and Harry. And in my opinion, excuse me, I think you're running more on your visibility, just like Rich Funke did, ex-TV personality. And sadly, I see politics becoming more or less political and more personality driven, and it starts at the top now with Trump as running for president.
Well, I think thank you for your comments on that. On the one hand, you're saying that, you know, you think this is all personality driven, but you wanted me to run for a different office. You know, I think that really diminishes my career as a journalist in this community. I have a really long record of doing extremely serious journalism. I blogged about social justice issues on my blog for a long time, and including inequality and segregation. So I think that really diminishes my work in this community when you say I'm just running as a news personality.
Let me get to the question, some of the what you have covered in your career. You've covered the Rochester City School District aggressively. I mean, there's no question about that. You brought that up earlier this hour. You've been critical of superintendents at times. Now you've got some critics saying you've been too negative about city schools or too tough on it. You know, what do you say to those who perceive your reporting and think that you're negative about public education?
Oh, that's ridiculous. I'm the daughter of two Rochester City School District educators. I'm a graduate of John Marshall High School. I'm a strong believer in public education. I'm very concerned about the proliferation of charter schools and what it will do to the city school district and our community. And I'm a strong believer in public education. But we can't make things better by burying our heads in the sand and not covering things aggressively. And that's what I did. You can call it negative, but I call it holding people accountable. I love this city, and I've covered many people who represent this city very aggressively. That to me, that's a part that shows love. It doesn't show hate. You know, and particularly with school superintendents, I would say this. Most of my coverage of the Rochester City School District hasn't really been policy-based. It's always been about finances. I mean, it's always been about promises not kept and spending on vacations and travel and this and that and budget cuts. And it's been very financial-based, not as policy-based.
Property tax kept. Do you support it or not?
I do. I am very concerned that right now it's pegged to something like, you know, 0% in some cases. So I'm very concerned about that. I don't think that gives districts much flexibility here, particularly when the state's not relieving mandates for them where they could save money in other ways. So if it was a straight 2%, I'd be okay with that.
Okay. So you don't like it moving year to year, because as what Rachel's describing is last year, that fixed number was significantly lower, I think, than the year before. And the year before was less than 2%, and this past year was less than 1%. So you're saying fix it at a number.
Yeah,
give them more predictability.
I think 2% is a fine number to put it at. Voters still have to approve these budgets. These districts are still accountable to voters. But I do think that telling districts they can only raise, you know, raise 0.5% more revenue, that puts them in a real bind when they have fixed costs such as salaries and health care.
All right, then let me ask you on city school education, because you've reported on it so much, sort of a broad-based question here, but this is two-pronged. First of all, part of why you're running is to help differentiate what you would be compared to what Harry Bronson would be in Albany. Where do you see yourself differing from him, especially in educational issues as they relate to impoverished districts like Rochester? And what do you think the first, there's not a silver bullet to fixing education or making it better. Some people say you have to fix poverty first. But how do you perceive that issue, sort of broadly speaking?
Sure. Well, as I said, I think on education, we are very different because he did go along with the governor's education reform plan, which severely punishes inner city schools. It closes poorly performing schools. That can hurt neighborhoods. It puts schools in receivership, gives them almost no time to improve. The resources aren't there for these schools. I very much think that we need to take a hard look at charter schools and their impact on the city school district. I would love to see some kind of local control of charter schools and city schools, something together where there would be some kind of board that can hold all of the schools accountable to make sure they're following the rules and can create more equitable funding. And that's both for city schools and for charter schools. You know, charter schools, it's kind of the Wild West right now. They're opening in Greece. They're spending money on rehabbing buildings here and there, not necessarily suggesting co-location, but I think there needs to be more local control and planning of what's happening right now, because right now there's absolutely no planning at all. And so I would speak up on those issues as well.
What do you think of the mayor's recent effort to at least get more control on schools and receivership?
Well, I thought it was kind of silly because there's no mechanism under state law to do that. And I'm very concerned about the receivership law. I'm very concerned about the test and punish cycle. I'm very concerned that we're closing and reopening these very high-need schools, and very little is changing here. East High School, it will be an interesting experiment to see if they're able to turn it around. But so far, you know, almost every single high-needs urban district in this country is really struggling because they're just overwhelmed.
All right, Larry in Rochester on the line with Rachel Barnhart. Go ahead, Larry.
Hi, I don't really have a question, just a concern I had. Whether you like or don't like the SAFE Act, I was profoundly disappointed in the way it was passed. Middle of the night, no chance for voter input. And I would just hope that in the future, Rachel, I hope you win, first of all, but having said that, I want legislators to not do that again, and I certainly don't want Governor Cuomo to ever do that again.
Well, it's not
we
just
deserve our chance to have our voice.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not just the SAFE Act. I mean, before they left Albany this past June, they passed something like more than 100 pieces of legislation without even looking at them. I mean, there were lawmakers saying, I don't even know what I just voted on, and that's not
but
right.
But how are you not going to be one of them?
Well, let me put it this way. I will always use my voice and tell you what is going on. And if I have to hold my nose and do something, I'll let you know that I'm holding my nose and doing it. I absolutely will. I will be transparent about what it is I'm doing, what it is I'm working on, and why.
Okay, now on the SAFE Act, so you don't like the way it was passed? Do you agree with Larry?
No, I agree. I absolutely agree. Something like this, people should have had to weigh in on. I mean, this was really rushed, as we saw with things that they had to roll back later on. It was wrong. But I am generally pro-gun control.
Okay. Should we do more? In other words, should there be further restrictions on gun ownership in the state?
You know, I don't know about that. I'm not crazy about assault weapons. I'm okay with an assault weapons ban. But I don't think you put the toothpaste back in the tube. I mean, I heard you mention the word confiscation the last hour. I don't know how that would work. I do think guns are a problem in this society. Absolutely. As state lawmaker, one thing that I would really want to do is push for funding for public education that would involve gun owners. And I think a lot of gun owners would agree with this, and we could find some common ground. The Rochester police chief will tell you that 60% of crime guns in the city were stolen from cars and homes and used to harm people. I'm right. Quite sure that there are gun owners who would hate for that to happen with their weapons. And I think raising awareness on what could happen if your weapon is stolen and how it could be used in this community is something that everyone can agree on, doesn't need a new law. And they have done PSAs like that in other places. I think it was St. Louis had a rash of guns being stolen from cars and used in crimes. And they did billboards on it. I think that's something that's reasonable, and it would at least open up a community discussion about responsible gun ownership.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour. And if you're on the phone, we're coming to you when we come back here. If you've sent an email or a tweet, we'll try to get to as many as we can for Rachel Barnhart, who is challenging Harry Bronson for his seat in the state assembly in the Democratic primary on September 13th. More next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the Next Connections First Hour, we reviewed the impact of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's comments about Donald Trump. The Supreme Court justice has essentially apologized for wading into politics. We'll talk to people in the legal community about the impact of judges making political statements and why it's important for them to stay out. Then second hour, we review the new Ghostbusters. Does it live up to the hype? Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Rick in Chilai is next. Go ahead, Rick.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Evan.
Sure.
Rachel, we all know how much you love Rochester, but I'm curious, what could you do to specifically improve the quality of life in Chilai and Henrietta?
Sure, yes. I'm really glad you asked that question. I'm looking forward to working with the town supervisors in both Henrietta and Chilai and learning a lot more about those two communities, and I've certainly learned a lot already campaigning out there. I think a lot of it will be driven by what are your needs. And I know that I'm a big supporter of the active transportation plans in both of those communities, and I'm also aware that we have an aging population, particularly in Henrietta, and that they'll have some needs. Affordable housing is a huge issue, especially for seniors. And that's going to be a big priority for me, as well as improving transit to both Henrietta and Chilai. There is demand for people out there to take public transit, and right now they're not being very served very well. But I'm open to all ideas and suggestions for what you need.
All right, so you've given us an opening on a number of things. On public transit, should the state spend more? Should we support high-speed rail?
You know, I'm kind of on the fence about high-speed rail. I'm a huge public transit person, but I would really need to see a study showing that it would benefit upstate New York. And I'm also really excited. Everyone's going to laugh when I say this, but there might be other forms of transportation coming that are more efficient than high-speed rail. The thing that concerns me about the high-speed rail proposal as it is right now, it's not that high speed. I think you'd really have to have something super dynamic in order for it to be worth the billions of dollars in costs. I'm far more concerned about how people get around our own community. One of my priorities would be to require industrial development agencies such as Comida to not award tax breaks to companies that are not located near workers. Here's an example. Xerox opened their call center out in Webster, and they got gobs and gobs of tax money to do it. This is a classic example of corporate welfare. And RTS ended up cutting the bus line out there to that call center. Well, then Xerox asked the state to kick in money to reinstate the bus line. So now we're subsidizing them twice. We paid for their call center, and we're paying for workers to get out there. That makes no sense. Transportation is a gigantic barrier for poor people to get jobs, and we have seen jobs migrate away from people for a long time in this community. And hey, if you want to locate your company far out, fine. But I don't know that we necessarily need to be helping you do that. It puts a strain on roads, it puts a strain on infrastructure, and it also makes it so people can't get to you unless they get in their cars. And that's a big problem for poor people in the city right now. So that's one economic development thing I think we can do that might help a lot of people.
Let's stay on economic development, because that's something that improves quality of life. When the economy improves, you have a number of ideas. Let me ask you a few specific questions first, and then we're going to work through some of the things that you have put out there. Starting with what's already been going on, do you think photonics has been handled well, and do you think it's a win for Rochester?
Well, photonics is something I'm very concerned about. I think it is a win for Rochester, and we certainly have the chops here to be the photonics center. We're already doing a lot with photonics. But so far, the governor's approach to photonics is much like his approach to the Buffalo Billion, and that is to throw a lot of money at companies that are completely unproven. He's acting like a venture capitalist, and he's frankly gambling with our money. And we don't know when it's going to show any result. For example, when the governor came to town, he said, we're going to have 1,600 jobs created at Eastman Business Park with these two companies. Turns out those two companies only employ a couple dozen people each, and they don't make anything right now. And these are very lofty projections, and millions and tens of millions of dollars were given to these totally unproven companies. So that's what concerns me about the state's involvement in photonics. Not quite sure what the federal government is doing at this point, but I'm very concerned about how this is going to go.
Harry Brunson, who you're running against last hour, said that he is also concerned about the Buffalo Billion, that he's skeptical about some of the promises, and that he wants to be following up on that. So it sounds like
he never once said anything about the Buffalo Billion until December of last year, when rumors started swirling that I was going to run against him. He was silent before then on the Buffalo Billion, which problems have been brewing for quite some time. He was silent on Startup New York, which is one of the biggest economic development debacles we have going here. In fact, he enthusiastically supported Startup startup, New York, which is spending millions of our dollars to make an extremely unfair playing field for businesses. And I don't believe that we should be continuing this program. And he never stood up and said, we need to end this program, despite two reports now showing it is not creating jobs.
We've talked to people associated with Startup New York from state offices. They say this was never intended to be a program that had all the jobs delivered in the first or the second year, that you need 5 years. We have to be patient, that this is planting seeds that will grow.
Look, there are no guarantees, but I had a problem with Startup New York when it started. On my blog, therochesterian.com, I called it in 2013, and I continually blogged about it, and I said, this program is unfair. Why should you pay taxes and I don't pay taxes? It is completely unfair, and it also was ripe for abuse. Some of these companies have very tenuous connections to universities, if at all. There was a brewery in Central New York that got into Startup New York. Well, we have breweries here. They're not allowed to get into Startup New York. It's the program is not fair, and it's not doing what it said it would do. And the Syracuse paper did a story with companies in Startup New York saying they would have come here anyway. So this program is a failure.
All right, so it sounds like your criticism on the way the state is using money to help spur economic development mirrors a lot of the reporting and work we've seen from someone like David K. Johnston. Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a big fan of his, and I agree with him on film tax credits. That's another program that, you know, Bronson supports, and we're giving millions and millions of dollars away to rich filmmakers, and we're not creating jobs here. I have a big problem with that. One thing that I would like to see happen is to, you know, if you have a startup, perhaps give them a percentage of their profits or a certain amount of their profits that they can have tax-free, then they can reinvest in their business. Be a one-time thing for a business. You'd have to set in some parameters so they couldn't open and close businesses to keep taking advantage of this, but all startups will tell you they want to reinvest their profits from the first year back into their business. Something like that, I think, is way more fair and could spur entrepreneurism.
Harry Bronson has supported the fight for 15. Do you support the fight for 15, or at least the current plans on minimum wage here?
I do support the fight for 15. I think it was really weird the way the state went about it, with different pay schedules for fast food workers and everyone else and the tipped workers. I think it was really unfortunate the state made it so complicated. I will say this, though. I'm kind of glad it's being phased in upstate New York, because I have a lot of friends who own small businesses, and they're very concerned about how it will affect them. And I think we'll have a real good opportunity right now to see. I personally don't think there's going to be a huge impact. I think people will have more money to spend, and our economy will be better off. But I'm glad we're phasing it in. I just wish it wasn't so complicated. And I also think we need to seriously listen to our business owners. We also need, though, to turn around and help our business owners if we're going to be requiring them to pay people more money. New York State has notoriously high tax burden, complicated tax burden. We could simplify that a little bit, and regulatory burdens. So I think there's no, you know, there are things that we can do for them, and we need to listen to them, especially as this process goes on, and see if there's something that we can do to help them.
All right. On the subject of wages, Elizabeth in Rochester wants to ask Rachel the same kind of question she asked as Harry Bronson. Go ahead.
You support raising the minimum wage. Are you supportive of having raised it for farm workers as well as other workers? And do you have any ideas about things that the state can do, programs that could be implemented to help family-scale farmers afford to pay higher wages to the people who work for them?
Yeah, I do think if you're going to have higher wages for you can't just have a minimum wage for certain classes of people. So I do support raising the minimum wage for farmers. But I also agree with you that there are things that we need to turn around and then do for farmers. And I don't have specific ideas, but I'm open to all ideas.
Okay. You also had four prongs regarding what to do about the economy, and I want to work through them and try to hit them quickly, because I know there's a lot of questions still left from our listeners. First of all, affordable fiber internet. What are we going to invest? How do you do it?
Right. I believe very, very strongly that Rochester needs to have fiber internet to every single home and business. I think this would really set us apart. The problem, the barrier, is that last mile cost. This is why Greenlight, which is a really popular company, can't go to every neighborhood. They can only go to neighborhoods where they'll recoup that last mile cost. That means going from the big fiber line and, you know, wiring your home. And I just believe that if we have fiber to every home and to every business. Think about the businesses that will be able to be started right in people's homes. And also think about the academic achievement that we will be affording our students and small children. We could have the next George Eastman or Bill Gates out there, but they're not going to invent something on their smartphone. They need to have access to the knowledge and the powerful knowledge that's out there. So where does the state come in on this? Monroe County and the city of Rochester used our tax dollars to build pretty extensive fiber internet systems. And our mayor and the former county executive, Maggie Brooks, said they were going to study how to best use this network, which I believe they only use about 20% of it. Most of this network is dark. And again, we paid for it. So I can totally see some kind of public-private partnership where a company like Greenlight might be contracted and where to build this out and to make it so that we can all use it. If you look at Google Fiber and how it helped in some other cities, it did spark a real entrepreneurial culture in those cities. And we can do that here in Rochester. But it's not just for the businesses. It's also, I think, for students and for children.
All right, you've already talked about your second prong, which is locating jobs near people. Number three, you say let entrepreneurs keep a portion of their profits tax-free. Explain.
Yeah, I just kind of talked about that a little bit as an alternative to Startup New York. I think this would afford them an opportunity to reinvest in their businesses. It's a simple thing to do, and that too would encourage entrepreneurship because, you know, our economy right now is filled with small businesses. They have replaced the big three.
Focusing on exports is the fourth prong. Tell me about that.
Yes. So we never talk about global trade in Rochester, but we have a long history of having very strong trading partners, and there are 42,000 people who work in Rochester in jobs that are supported by exports. And what we're finding and what the experts are saying across the country is cities that come up with export plans end up increasing jobs. There are companies out there who may not know that they can access exports, that they can export their products. I know Greater Rochester Enterprise is working on this very well. But exports isn't something we talk about. I'd love to move it front and center and see if there's a way that we can help companies grow their markets internationally, because this is a huge, huge way that we might be able to grow jobs here in Rochester. We export about $7 billion worth of products a year.
On Friday on this program, we're going to have Arnold Rothschild talking about the new feasibility studies and possible locations for what they call a performing arts center. It sounds to me like it's one large new theater. We'll see. But regardless, the question has come up in recent years, should the state be investing more of our tax dollars in a big new theater in Rochester? Yes or no?
Well, the devil's always in the details, right? So this consultant comes out with the city saying that we can support a performing arts center
with no subsidies.
I don't know that.
And they always
say
no subsidies. I mean, we'll talk to Arnie about that. And I'm not trying to be dismissive.
Yeah.
But we've seen a lot of promises about no subsidies in the past on big public private
partnerships. I don't know that I believe that. I will say generally I'm very supportive of a new performing arts center downtown. The auditorium, I think, is really lacking in many ways. I think the Midtown site would be very nice for it. I know people are talking about an outdoor space for something. I could see a mixed-use project there as well. But I'm generally supportive of it, but, you know, you've got to see the details. I'm not necessarily in support of something that would require a lot of tax dollars every year to subsidize. But I do think a downtown performing arts center could be a real gem for our area.
Harry Bronson last hour said he supports expanding the use of medical marijuana, but he opposes recreational marijuana. Where do you stand on those?
Full legalization. I agree with full legalization. We have a problem in this country. The war on drugs is not working. I can't tell you how many doors I knock on during the petitioning process in particular. People are smoking marijuana in their homes. People are already smoking marijuana. I don't think this is a crime. This war on marijuana has played a huge role in the mass incarceration of young black men in our country. And I think it's just time to stop the war on drugs as it pertains to marijuana. And I do think we have to have a different conversation as it pertains to heroin. I'm very concerned about that epidemic as well. And you know, it's a very complicated issue, but what we're doing now is not working. And we need to rethink our policy.
All right. Back to some listener questions. And Stephen writes, what specifically would candidate Barnhart do to reduce segregation in the city of Rochester and the county of Monroe? First of all, we're segregated, aren't we?
We are. And this is I went to John Marshall High School. I now live in the Beechwood neighborhood, a very challenged neighborhood in the city of Rochester. This is a huge concern. you know, I talked earlier that I think we need more affordable housing in all parts of our community. But, you know, along with that goes transit as well. You can't just build affordable housing and then not provide good transit. I don't know what the solution is to desegregating our community. I do know this. I'm very excited about proposals, particularly from Bill Calla, to have voluntary schools that are both urban and suburban, and expanding urban-suburban programs. I think, absent a court order, I don't know how you desegregate our schools. I don't know how you do it. I really don't. But I'd love to. I think there has to be community buy-in, and I'm very excited about some of the proposals that are getting community buy-in.
Also on Twitter, Lawrence wants to know, and look, this is a question that came in this hour. I didn't get a chance to ask Carrie Brunson, but I will ask Lawrence's question. Please ask the candidate about climate change. It's important for politicians to lead on this issue, and I'm not sure local politicians are doing that.
Well, I know the city and the county, I believe, are taking, you know, the county is looking at renewable energy, so is the city. I'm a firm believer that climate change is...
I'm not sure the county executive believes climate change is real, but I don't know.
Okay, you know, I've never spoken to her about it.
I asked her three times about it during the campaign. I could not get an answer, but
go ahead. Sorry, didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I do believe that climate change is a problem. I believe man-made climate change is a problem, and I think the state needs to lead the way on making sure that we're using renewable energy.
Does that mean investing more money in that, or doing what?
Any money that we spend on renewable energy has to be reasonable. I mean, things have to make sense. And so far, a lot of things are making sense, but I do support goals to increase renewable energy.
Would you have supported fracking?
Absolutely not.
And you don't want to see that reopened?
No, not unless the science tells it's safe. And right now it's telling us there's too many questions about it. So until that changes, absolutely not.
All right. Carl wants to know if you think Mayor Warren is doing a good job for our city.
You know, it's not an easy job. And I don't know if I'd say she's doing a good job. I would say that she's continued a lot of the policies from the previous administration. I'm not sure we need to change mayors next year. I really don't know if we do. I think she'll be challenged, and I think she'll have a big fight. I think she's not very popular right now, and I think she's got a lot to do over the next year.
How would you work with her?
Oh, I'd work with anyone. I'd work with anyone.
I'm asking if you think you could have build a relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah. She endorsed my opponent, but I absolutely could work with Mayor Lovely Warren.
Were you surprised that she endorsed your opponent?
Not at all. Not at all. She does what's best for her, and I don't believe she ever wants me in elected office for her. You know, who knows? Maybe she'll think one day I'll run against her. But she also, we also had a contentious relationship when I was a reporter that first year. I extensively covered her disastrous first year in office, and she's never really forgotten that.
Now, on the subject of journalism, as you raise it here, you're out of journalism for now, and you say you may not go back. So we don't know. Anyway, who knows where the future is?
You know, I don't have a backup plan. I think it might be hard to go back because now everybody knows what I think about everything.
Okay, but here's what I wanted to ask you on that. Because now that you're out of journalism, you can cut it loose a little bit. And let me ask you if you think, you know, you have a reputation of being tough. Occasionally people think you're overly tough or you're more of an advocate. You know, you're too opinionated, et cetera.
I was always an advocacy journalist. And I mean, most people who followed me closely knew I was a Democrat. I don't think that was a huge secret because of the things I like to talk about. I like to talk about inequality. I like to talk about segregation. I like to talk about poverty. And so I don't think it was a shock to people when I came out as a Democrat.
No, right. But I'm asking you if you think overall your critique of the media... Is the media unwilling to challenge power too much? I mean, how do you view the modern media?
So I spoke earlier about my fight with AFTRA 10 years ago. And shortly after I left Channel 8 in 2006, the union there was dissolved. The end result was that wages dropped like a rock. When I left Channel 8 recently, I mean, I had colleagues who are on TV giving you stories every day, making $30,000 a year. That is less money than I made 15 years ago when I was their age. That has major repercussions for the way we get news in our community. What it means is they are not going to be able to stay here and make a career. Our generation, Evan, is the last one that I think will be able to really stay here and gain institutional knowledge, gain the type of institutional knowledge in which we can challenge power. This younger generation They won't be able to do that unless something changes.
But I'm wondering if you think culturally there's a reluctance to challenge power.
Yes, because I lived it for 17 years. I mean, yes, I had to fight. I felt like I was fighting the good fight many, many, many days and really having to make a case to my bosses and my colleagues as to why I needed to do particular stories. And there was a reluctance many, many times. And I was mostly successful, but I wasn't always successful. And I shouldn't have had to fight those fights.
Was it okay to be an advocacy journalist, in your own words, as opposed to just a traditional journalist?
Yes, because I've always been very transparent about what it is I'm reporting, where I'm getting information, and I still believe that I was very balanced. I don't believe in false, you know, there's a false equivalency right now where we have to do he said, she said, but nobody really gets to the truth of the matter. I always prided myself on trying to get to the truth of the matter, and we need more journalism like that. But it's going to be harder when we can't have people with experience sticking around.
All right, we're down to about our last minute. We had a couple questions. A lot of questions this hour, people saying, I still don't hear enough of the differences. So you got a final minute. Tell the listeners where you think your biggest differences with Harry Bronson are and why you're running.
Well, I think I've laid out a very good case as to why there are tremendous differences between us, not just in style, but in substance. I will be very accessible. I won't be invisible. I will be present in every single part of this district. I am not going to be a yes person. I'm not going to vote with the speaker 94% of the time and with my colleagues 97% of the time, which is what Harry's record is. I will be someone who is extremely transparent about what I am doing and why, and I will involve you. I think that is a huge difference between us.
And by the way, in the last 30 seconds, he said he thinks it's very common for anybody to vote with their party most of the time. He doesn't think he's unique in that way.
He may not be, but that doesn't mean it's right. I'm not running against everybody else. I'm running against him.
Rachel Barnhart, and more information online if you want to find it. Rachel, where?
RachelForAssembly.com. I've been blogging and I've been taking questions and I'm certainly on Facebook and Twitter. Listen, if I'm elected, you're going to Albany with me. You think I'm going to stop blogging and tweeting? And I'm not. You'll know what I'm doing.
Thanks for not answering any cell phone calls during this hour, though. I know you give it out to everybody. Harry Bronson's also on Twitter and easy to find online. And now you've heard from both of them for the full hour. Our thanks to both Assemblyman Harry Bronson for the first hour. Rachel Barnhart, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening with all the phone calls and questions and comments from our listeners. All right, Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a good afternoon, and we will talk with you on member-supported public radio on Wednesday.